Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, June 15, 2023. Sudan's military leader blames the rapid support forces for killing the governor of West Darfur State on Wednesday.
Recent escalation is also a continuation of the historical conflict between ethnic groups, indigenous groups, the Masali, and Arabs, local and those coming from outside the country.
And inmates at Juba Central Prison says the judicial system in the country is in the pockets of police investigators.
If you ask the investigator when my case will be forwarded to the court, the investigator will say, extend your hand. Most of the people in here are poor. These are people who have nothing to give to the investigators. It is said nobody is above the law, but our law currently is in the pocket.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The governor of West Darfur State, Khamis Abdullahi Abubakar, was killed Wednesday after he publicly accused the paramilitary rapid support forces and allied militias of committing what he called genocide against civilians in Al Jineina, capital of West Darfur State. Sudan Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan condemned the killing of Abubakar and blamed it on the rapid support forces, which have been engaged in a two-month-old conflict with the army. The Rapid Support Forces also released a statement condemning the killing of Governor Abubakar by what they called outlaws working with the Sudanese military intelligence amid the continuing tribal conflict in West Darfur State. Nabil Biagio reached Saleh Mahmoud, president of the Darfur Bar Association, who says the conflict, which started in Khartoum 2 months ago, has renewed tribal violence in the rest of Darfur region.
The conflict is not new in Darfur. The conflict started in 2003 and is still continuing. This conflict resulted also in crimes of genocide and crimes against humanity. I think this recent escalation is also a continuation of the historical conflict between ethnic groups, indigenous groups, the Masali, and Arabs, local and those coming from outside the country. This incident of the killing of or assassination of the Wali itself, even the Rapid Support Force has also released a statement saying that they are not involved. They are not involved in this killing. And then this
yes,
is why we
they
think
said
it's important.
They blame it. They blame it on rogue elements. They said rogue elements, elements that are
exactly,
out of control.
Exactly, because I think the situation, the environment there, is very complicated and very chaotic. There is always a possibility that a factions who are definitely very much a tribal can also be accused of being implicated in the commission of these crimes. It is about land. This conflict is about land. And then so many elements, so many people are blamed. First of all, the central government is responsible for what is happening there for more than since the signing of the Juba Agreement. And after that, there was a decision from the government of Sudan about the necessity of the exit of UNAMID without even talking about the credible alternative to assume the responsibility of protection of the people. Number two, the presence of the army garrison there in Al Jineina is also responsible because they are very passive. They are passive. They don't take a step to defend anybody there when crimes occur and they don't intervene to protect their lives. I think they are involved in this. Again, the other issue of importance is that after the signing of the Juba agreement and the exit of the unit, there was a plan saying that there should be deployment of collective army belonging to the rebel movements, the government, and the rapid support force to replace UNAMID. This never happened. There is a vacuum. There is a situation where there is lawlessness. There is no rule of law, no police, there's no criminal courts, I think, judges, and it is a complete chaotic situation where absence of the rule of law is one of the basic elements that is encouraging potential criminals to continue committing crimes without being accountable for their acts.
How did the conflict, which started in Khartoum between the army and the rapid support forces, reignited the old conflict in Darfur that happened in 2003, which was, you know, waged on an ethnic basis. Even the United Nations representative in Sudan, Volker Perthes, admitted that the violence that's going on in Al Janina right now has an ethnic dimension.
You correctly mentioned the statement of the representative of the UN Secretary General, Mr. Guterres, here, Mr. Volker, describing the nature of the conflict there. But the situation that erupted in Khartoum definitely is affecting other parts of the Sudan. Now, immensely, it affected Darfur, first of all, because all the five states are witnessing and experiencing a conflict which is continuing today. You can go back and see what is happening right now in Al-Fasha, in Kutum, Nayala, Galingi, and Al-Jinan, of course. So it is a direct and immediate consequence of the situation in Khartoum that led to the escalation, as you mentioned. Again, Darfur is very fragile. We have a situation where the SAF, that is Sudanese Army, and the Rapid Support Force are main parties to the conflict. Everywhere in the five states of Darfur, then we have the additional dimension of ethnic tribal conflict that is continuing since 2003.
That's Saleh Mahmoud, a prominent Sudanese human rights lawyer and president of the Darfur Bar Association. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from Wad Medeni, some 85 miles southeast of the capital, Khartoum. Some analysts say the international community is reluctant to put pressure on Chad's government to transition to civilian rule. In this report from N'Djamena, Henry Wilkins speaks to one man arrested during protest against the junta and local politicians who say civilians need political representation to air their grievances against the state.
General Mohamed Idriss Deby seized control of Chad in 2021. His father, the previous president, had just been killed during an attempt by state forces to put down a group of rebels in the north. Altogether, the Deby family's junta has ruled Chad for almost 33 years, and while an agreement was made in August last year to transition to civilian rule, experts say progress towards fulfilling the terms has been patchy. Djuna Avuksuma, the leader of the opposition Democratic Party, said he thinks citizens are losing patience and need political representation to air their grievances. He says everyone is waiting for the day when the anger starts to take hold of the general population. He thinks he's not being too pessimistic in saying he thinks it could happen, since there is no safety valve. In October, protesters took to the streets of N'Djamena, the capital. Around 70 were shot dead when the military opened fire on the crowds, while hundreds more were arrested. One man who said he was not a protester but was mistakenly arrested in an area of N'Djamena where protests were taking place asked VOA to withhold his identity for fear of government reprisals. He claims he was taken to an infamous penal colony in the Sahara Desert known as Coro Toro.
On a filé toute la nuit.
He says he was driven through the night, reaching the prison at around 4 a.m. He says the person under him in the truck was dead by the time they arrived. He says it was horrific, with people dying from thirst and hunger en route. The man VOA spoke to was recently released, along with around 700 others, after a presidential pardon for October's protesters. Chad is one of the poorest countries in the world and has played an important part in international efforts to quell an insurgency of terrorists linked to the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda in Africa's Sahel region, allying closely with France in particular. Some experts say this means the international community is reluctant to put pressure on Deby to transition to civilian rule. One analyst thinks there is not much the international community can do to force a transition to civilian rule, however. Michael Shurkin is with 14 North Strategies, a Washington-based consultancy.
The reality is that there's only so much they can do short of intervening in the political affairs of another country, which, despite allegations of neocolonialism that are routinely thrown at the United States and France, the reality is that the U.S. and France don't like to be that, don't want to be doing that.
Aside from Chad's rebellion in the north, in the south, there has been a recent flare-up of violence between herder and sedentary farmer communities, a common cause of instability across the Sahel region. One herder community leader in western Chad told VOA the government has been ineffective in keeping farmers off land designated for herder use. Ibrahim Alifa Mayena is a herder community leader in the town of Dabali.
The solution, là, si les gens, là...
He says if the farmers don't leave, there's no solution to the problem. He says the government told the herders they would move the farmers off the land designated for the cattle, but that hasn't happened. Instead, the farmers have built homes on the land. Analysts think violence is likely to spread from Sudan to Chad's eastern border region, but many also worry that with such a delicate balance of power, it could threaten to engulf the entire country unless more is done to address popular grievances. Chad's Minister for Reconciliation is yet to respond to a request for comment. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, N'Djamena, Chad.
Some inmates at Juba Central Prison say the justice system in South Sudan is corrupt and many police investigators are allegedly bribed during court hearings. The Inspector General of South Sudan National Police Service and the country's Chief Justice say they are investigating the matter. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
More than 2,700 inmates at Juba Central Prison facility were paraded outside their cells during a visit by Chief Justice Chanrej Madut, Inspector General of Police Gerald Majak Akech, and Justice Minister Ruben Madul Arol on Thursday. Nicola Nyethkun, who spoke on behalf of the inmates, says the country's justice system has remanded several South Sudanese without proper court hearing.
If you ask the investigator when my case will be forwarded to the court, the investigator will say, extend your hand. Most of the people in here are poor. These are people who have nothing to give to the investigators. It is said nobody is above the law, but our law currently is in the pocket. Usually, the judge tells the accused, say the truth and the truth will set you free. But now, your truth will not set you free, but your money.
The Inspector General of Police, Gerald Majak Akech, says his office will investigate the allegations and hold detective found guilty accountable.
The head of investigations in the Central Equatoria is also here, and some of the investigators and some attorney generals are here. We are going to revise ourselves, and if such things are there, they will have to be corrected. There is nobody above the law. We need this country to be a nation of order and where everyone will find his right.
Justice Minister Ruben Madul Arol says stakeholders of criminal justice should respect the law and avoid bribes. He says the country's transitional justice system should protect the rights of South Sudanese.
We'll have to implement it in such a way that each and every one of you feels that his issues are being addressed. There are other things beyond that. Dair al-Hukuma Kulla will try our best to engage the government.
Chief Justice Chandrej Madut says his office has set up mobile courts to decongest Juba Central Prison and speed up trials across the country.
Even in the prison, I have brought four judges. I thought this was a solution to help in solving the issue, but I don't know why it is still like this. If it is necessary, I will increase the number of judges in the prison here.
Madut says he plans to visit some counties across the country to fast-track trials. In July last year, the government initiated a judicial reform committee tasked with reviewing relevant laws, advising on judicial reforms, and restructuring of the judiciary to enhance its effectiveness. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis leaves hospital on Friday. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. Question today.
What is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Tomorrow, Pope Francis is expected to leave the Rome hospital where he underwent a three-hour abdominal surgery last week. The Vatican Pontiff spent this morning thanking doctors and nurses who have looked after him during his stay. He did rounds in a wheelchair, according to photographs released by the Vatican, and visited children in the pediatric oncology and children and the child neurosurgery department. The Pope, who had a colon surgery in 2021, had been suffering from hernia on the side of a scar from previous surgery. Tanzania's government is encouraging drivers to switch from putting gasoline in their tanks to compressed natural gas. This initiative aims to lower carbon emissions that cause global warming. As Charles Combe reports from Dar es Salaam, some drivers are also hoping the switch will save them money in the long run.
Jackson Peter, an Uber driver based in Dar es Salaam, recently switched from using gasoline to compressed natural gas, CNG, in his car. He says he did it for the environment and his wallet.
Niliona gharama za mafuta zinapanda na zijulikani zitapanda paka kufikia wapi.
I noticed that fuel prices were rising, and I didn't know until when the prices will continue to rise. Also, using gas is less expensive and better for the environment compared to petrol and diesel. It costs at least $1,000 to convert a car to compressed natural gas in Tanzania. It's a price many car users find more affordable, even though the government does not subsidize the charge. The Tanzanian government aims to power 8,000 cars with natural gas in Dar es Salaam alone. Officials say so far, more than 2,000 vehicles have made the switch since the initiative began in 2018. At the conversion center located at the Dar es Salaam Institute of Technology, there's a steady stream of customers. Workshop manager Gerutu Bosige explains. He says with the increasing awareness and education about natural gas usage in Tanzania, the number of customers has grown rapidly from one to thousands. He projects there will be over 6,000 customers by 2025, reflecting the positive response as more Tanzanians embrace the benefits of using natural gas in vehicles. The Tanzanian government has embraced the 2015 Paris Agreement to limit global warming, mitigate the impacts of climate change, and build an environmentally sustainable future. Jamal Baruti sits on Tanzania's National Environment Council. Between now and 2030, he says, the aim of Tanzania is to make sure the amount of hazardous gases emission is reduced by up to 30 to 35% compared to the assessment that was conducted previously. He says, we know these gases come from various areas, including the burning of forests, charcoal, and cars. So with this trend of using natural gas in our country, we believe we'll reduce the emission of these gases to that extent. Besides encouraging cars to switch to CNG, the government has banned the use of firewood and charcoal by private and government institutions beginning in 2025. The government is also shifting investments to alternative energy sources, including solar energy, geothermal power, wind energy, and hydropower. Meanwhile, Jackson is confident his switch to CNG will pay off, anticipating significant profits while prioritizing environmental conservation. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
From Tanzania, we go to China, where U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is heading to China late this week, a trip that was rescheduled from February after a suspected Chinese spy balloon flew through U.S. airspace. VOA State Department Bureau Chief Nick Ching reports expectations are low that Blinken's trip will be able to reset the two countries' tense relations.
A day before the U.S. military shot down a Chinese surveillance balloon, Secretary of State Antony Blinken postponed his meetings in Beijing, and U.S.-China ties hit a new low.
China's decision to fly a surveillance balloon over the continental United States is both unacceptable and irresponsible. That's what this is about. It's a violation of our sovereignty. It's a violation of international law.
After a few months, the top U.S. diplomat said it is essential for the two countries to maintain regular lines of communication.
It's clearly in the interest of both countries. Most dangerous thing is not to communicate and, as a result, to have a misunderstanding and miscommunication.
The Pentagon also wants Beijing to answer a military hotline so generals can talk during incidents like last week's close encounter involving U.S. and Chinese troops in the Taiwan Strait. Observers say, despite the tensions, Both governments are trying to set up a summit later this year. Barney Glaser is managing director of the Indo-Pacific program at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. She spoke to VOA via Zoom.
Both countries are working toward a possible meeting between Biden and Xi Jinping at the APEC meeting, which will take place in San Francisco in November. And in order to have a successful summit, if that is indeed on the agenda, there needs to be a lot of preparation.
While Washington is seeking to re-engage Beijing on the issues of counter-narcotics and climate change, congressional critics are skeptical the two countries can have a substantial change in the status of their relationship. Nikki Chin, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Wenge Mambo by Oliver Mutukuzu. Listening to Oliver Mutukuzu and the song Wenge Mambo. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter Handley, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.